Hello, welcome to today's episode on blockchain and financial inclusion. I'm Arun Krishnakumar from Rhetoric in London, and I have Effie with me.
Hello, I'm Effie Pilarinu, FinTech and Blockchain Advisor out of Switzerland.
I'd like to welcome our guest, Monique Moreau. I will only say that she's the co-founder of the Humanized Internet and involved in many other activities. And I'll let her speak from the place that she's at today as she moves around a lot and tell us first, Monique, about your activities.
Thank you, both Aaron and Effie. I'm Monique Moreau, and I'm a co-founder and president of the Humanized Internet. It's a Swiss-based nonprofit. We are looking at several areas of problems that need to be looked at. One is, I'll put it in three areas, three buckets. One is the issue of how we define sets of identity to include the notion of e-sovereignty, or also looking at something that is very, very interesting in the terms of how do you develop, if you will, this notion of an online trésor, or if you want to call it a safety deposit, that is only owned you and your own family members. And it's not maintained by a central authority, which is a really, really difficult problem, right? So if you think about a treasury box or something, when you look at a bank where your documents are held, how do you manage that? Problems that we need to look at and the questions we need to ask as an industry is, digital in terms of documentation good enough? And by the way, these are sets of identities that you choose to share with whomever you want to share. So we're living in a very, very interesting time, whether or not the institutions that we know have weaknesses. Maybe technology is sort of an enabler in this area. And the reason why, to Effie, to your question, your last question, the reason why I'm in Essen is because there is a meeting, there's going to be by the Mercator Foundation, which is one of the larger foundations here in Germany. And basically, we look at the discussions around digital identity, sovereignty, and the future of democracy. Alexander von Humboldt Internet Institute and Society in Berlin, several other partners, to include Procebus, by the way, one of the seven winners for 2018, digital identity and the future of democracy, and whether or not you can deal with randomized voting, and how do you address those particular issues. So excited about the events, particularly that will be in tomorrow, because you're going to be meeting people, we're going to be meeting people, whether they're politicians, whether they're students, whether they're people who are looking at how do we solve for this future of democracy, particularly in Europe, because that's where we're dealing with, is the European geography per se.
Amazing. Thank you, Monique. And for our listeners that don't know about Procebus, which is based out of Switzerland, and in a nutshell is e-government, if you like, as a service. I'm not going to say much more, and I'll give it over to Arun. I know he wants to ask a lot from Monique.
Monique, thanks for the energetic explanation of what you're doing. I see you wearing various hats. I'm especially interested in your recent role at Hycon. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So let's set it back again. Hycon is a firm that I'm the senior advisor there. They are in the crypto, not only the cryptocurrency world, but they're also in the blockchain world. And that's more important. These are leaders in South Korea. Taewon Kim, who is the CEO, is working with governments to actually sensitize governments and universities as to the importance of blockchain, not only for the region, but also in Asia particularly. So they have chosen, which is fantastic, at least two people who are senior advisors with them, one of whom is based in Germany. His name is Dr. Philip Sadner, and he's with the Frankfurt School of Events and Management Center there. And I'm the other person. So you see the closeness with which the company wants to work, at least between South Korea, very, very strong lead. And what they're doing as a protocol, you know, a directed acrylic graph, they're looking at issues around how do you solve for the short, for some of the, and we're working also with the Spectre protocols, solve for some of the short terms, if you call it weaknesses that you see in Bitcoin blockchain today. And they are looking at really executing on that. And not only have they done their sets of research, they already have gone on. They've gone on mainnet already. They had a mainnet celebration, I think, this past June. They are at least a couple, 100 to 200 people. I have had the pleasure to meet at INSO, international group, applying it into philanthropy and charity. So I think this is a nice thing that you said, the social good, but it's not just articulating social good, it's really applying it. And so the thing that is important for me when I become a senior advisor, and whether Procivis or in Switzerland or in Seoul with HICON, is that there are tenants have to align to, because as you well know, reputations can be tainted very quickly. And so the tenets for good are very important. Meeting the leadership team is very important.
Monique, I know that you're very passionate about diversity and inclusion. And I'd like to ask you how that weaves into all the work that you're doing in blockchain, in identity, and all the other organizations that I see that you're involved in looking at sort of a more the future society.
So a very good question, Effie. Diversity and inclusion are important, as you well know. It's not just about gender, it's mindsets, it's different age groups, different ethnicities, etc. And if we don't reflect in chain space, we so often, if we don't reflect the society that we're in, we are just echo chambers of ourselves. I think many people have heard about the one event that occurred in North America, in Miami, which was a blockchain conference. I think it was February timeframe. There were a couple of thousand people who had attended. Some of them were women. One of was noted, I believe, was that out of the, I may be incorrect here, but out of the 88 sessions, 85 were male. So I think the type of thing that we have to be careful of, there are a lot of women investors, there are a lot of women leaders, a lot of people of different ages, there are a lot of people of different backgrounds, and we'll be very, very, I think we should be sensitive of the fact that if you don't see organizations at their advisory boards, if you don't see organizations in their management team, where you this diversity of mindset and diversity of people does not exist, then it should be called out.
There was a Medium article today, which was shared on LinkedIn, and it kind of named about 200 women thought leaders in the blockchain space. And it kind of said, if ever you want people in the blockchain space and you're looking for women, here you go. So don't complain that you don't see too many women in the space.
Because I think 200 is nice, but I think there's more and more.
Of course.
If you ask some of our colleagues, says they will say, well, that may be from what I understand, there are probably a couple of thousand at least. That's just the tip of the iceberg. It's nice that people have called it out. And I think you're going to see more and more of it in the future. Because, you know, got room for for inclusion overall. That I was in the blockchain Partner Summit in Seoul this past July, and I was astounded to see that it was fairly balanced panels and balanced balance in terms of what you saw there was something that I had articulated in an interview with that HICON had led. So certainly there's great opportunity to do better. That's just really my point.
I think that we have to be a little sympathetic to the West, at least, where still the corporate structure and the high levels of the corporate ladder are dominated by men, and naturally that cannot change overnight. So whether it's the human resources or the capital resources in the West, at least, they're still managed predominantly men. So we see the same thing in the blockchain world. I see it that way. And as you point, in certain countries in Asia, it isn't like that, or even in the Middle East, because it's just a different structure of the society. Monique, can we ask you, are you working with emerging markets, or are some of the projects?
Right. So one of the areas, when we call it emerging markets, one area that our use case we're working on is the caregiver use case. We are an MIT Seoul finalist. And so that's coming out of Jordan, really, to work with the Jordanians, not only UNHCR on the ground, but also the people in Jordan and also the refugees. I visited Zaatari camp in Jordan. And the narrative here is around caregivers as a shortage. It's not just nurses, but caregivers. And so the person who's leading this project with whom we're working cross-organizationally is Dr. Francis Hughes, who is a Fulbright scholar. And Dr. Hughes has worked 3 years in Geneva, and she's based in New Zealand. So we have stated that there is this shortage. There is also the narrative of how technology can be used to solve for it, and how can we work with refugees in addition to citizens who are based in Jordan, because there are 18% unemployment. So that's a situation where we are working, and so that's on the that's more on the, if you want to call it, sort of the social good component of it. Certainly, in terms when you say emerging markets, I mean, it's very open, because the cases that we're taught are very very interesting. So credentialing here is going to be an example of how we use blockchain for papers, for certificates. But if you're a refugee, what you're most concerned about is, will it be accepted by countries, be accepted by organizations? And that's why we're working with the International Caregiver Organization.
One question I have is, you seem to be working a lot with the United Nations and some of the public bodies that are very focused on these social impact projects. So how much of awareness is present in those within those bodies, and how excited are they about this technology?
The countries, the organizations are very much excited about blockchain, and this is what we're seeing. I think this is extremely important to note. There is an EU blockchain for social good competition that's coming up, and all papers and everything in 2019. UN organizations are looking at blockchain for various use cases that we've seen, including UN Women. So, and governments have been looking at that, or exploring what blockchain can do for its own for its own country. Let me give you an example specifically. I'm working with Dr. Philip Sandner on a book where the question is asked, how can blockchain help the German economy? And so the chapter I'm going to be particularly contributing to is, can the insurance industry be saved? So, you know, these are the types of things. And so when you go to governments, when you go to these types of organizations, etc., it's a nice starting point, but to your probably what is implied here, how do you pivot to profit or profit entities? What will it do to induce other industries and other verticals, especially when we're talking about the Internet of Things, you know, and supply chain, and how do we deal with that, which is a big issue, a major issue too, improving providence of what it is you buy and where it's grown, etc. There's huge amount of opportunity here, components of it. My thesis here for you, Arun, and also Effie, is that we're talking a lot about protocols, which is interesting. And for people outside of this, is a key thing, right? I'm going to use the very person on the street understands means to that person, right? What does it mean to your grandmother, and so on and so forth, without going down the path of explaining, yes, of technology bolts.
You hit the nail, Monique. Again, I think that we talk between us as if we're talking to each other most of the time, and then a lot of the books that are coming out, I mean, they're necessary, but again, the kind of talking to those that are in the ecosystem, or at least, you know, with half their leg in the ecosystem, we need to talk to everybody. We need to talk to a broader base and bring everybody in to understand. And we need to talk that language that you just said. What's in it for me, so to speak? How will my life change? How can I, you know, organize different? Is it about education? Is it about, you know, work? Is it about access to whatever It is like, you know, we can easily explain the internet and then that it's more about access and connecting to others. That's kind of a simple explanation. But then there's all these other complex areas where the internet has failed. And that's really what we are trying to do here. So we really need to work on this a lot. And I think what you said resonates in terms of remembering that when we are doing work in this space.
Yeah, I would say, look, I mean, this is an opportunity for all of us because we've been in this space and we see the possibilities is to simplify the narrative. Yes, given the fact that we're in, it's nascent at the point in time, a lot of analogies to the beginning of the internet, I mean, the internet, and when you look at the internet 30 years ago, nobody ever talked about e-commerce at the time. There was a pushback that, you know, the postal company pushed out of business. And what we're looking at are alternatives. And, you know, there's people will talk about, you know, you've got Bitcoin, you've got cryptocurrency, you've got you got blockchain, you've got asymmetric cryptography, you've got so many other wonderful things or technologies. Don't forget the one thing that's very important, and that is the internet of money or value that's come out of this. And we have to be able to speak cogently of it. And I think this goes to another narrative. And perhaps the thesis here is that there's a concern that some 15-year-old child and some can program value and assets. And that becomes a very interesting set of theses and hypotheses and has implications to everything. And so you get into this decentralized, well, we know we have that existing between peer and so on and so forth. And I'm personally very excited that in October, we're going to be celebrating 10 years of Satoshi Nakamoto, he, she, they. And so they're, you know, everybody's preparing for that happy day, which of course was work based on previous shoulders of giants, you know, as we all well know when we look at the history. It's really exciting.
Monique, you touched upon a very interesting point there, which is 15-year-olds actually creating internet of value. One question there is, how soon should that be regulated? We don't want to regulate it too soon because you want innovation to thrive, but you don't want to leave it as is for too long either because greed kicks in. And we're already seeing that.
Well, so you have to, and Effie knows this because of our relationship with University of Nicosia, which is a great university, by the way. I'm at the end of master's degree of the master's degree in digital currency. One of the areas here is around law, and you don't want this to be, you don't want to overregulate you don't know what it is you're regulating, right? Because you have to actually work with the regulators. And so you're going to have technologists, you have this intersectionality between technology, economics, where the protection and jurisdictional reach is. One of the actual facts here is that 81%, maybe that's just the tip of the iceberg, of ICOs or initial coin offerings are scams. And that what happens here is when you have that scam behavior, then you have to, where does protection to the end consumer where is that protection? And with it goes to what Effie was talking about earlier, all of us, is around education. So reg tech sandboxes help. And I think it really does. And it takes, you know, taking people along the journey really does. The worst thing you can do, and I'm of course, we, you know, live in neutral countries, is to tell a very established financial institution they're not going to exist anymore. And it was like saying years ago that voice would be free to somebody where his or her cash cow was voice, right? Now that came out later when you looked at Skype and Google Hangout and so on and so forth. But you have to take these institutions along because they will lash out with awkward and maybe we won't like what we see.
Yes, Monique, I think that we want to ask you a couple of more personal questions to end our podcast today. So are you up for it?
Go for it. I think this is the
Yeah, well, it's first of all not a question. It seems to me, even through a podcast which doesn't have the visual, that your passion and your excitement does come through, and that you're like a kid in a playground, completely immersed and present in what you're doing in this big journey. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, it's passion. And I think that, you know, this is lifelong learning. What I love about this is that technology has no agency and it has no age limit.
Yeah, it's so true. So how's your frequent flyer mileage account doing this year?
Pretty good. I would say, it's great. This is how you see the world. Little did I know blockchain would be sort of the catalyst to that, but I'm flying quite frequently. I'm going on vacation. By the way, I'm going to Patmos, which is in Greece, you know. Okay. And then after that, I'm big whirlwind of travel. So that takes me to Southern California. Travel will take me to Portugal. Web Summit travel will take me to decentralized in Athens. So it's just the beginning. And I just to let you know, it's really passionate.
Am I correct to assume that you and me are not running in the marathon in Athens just before the decentral conference?
I am not going to be running. I mean, I'll probably be there in spirit. But I think wonderful that Greece is host. I mean, that, you know, Nicosia's host, it's chosen Athens, and so much is happening in Greece, and it's great.
Yeah. And by the way, Athens is actually the European city for books this year. There'll be an official launch in October. So on that note, any exciting book that you'd like to share with us that you're reading or you read recently?
Well, I'm in the process of writing one called The Humanized Internet.
Oh,
I'm actually, so that will be due for publication and probably the first quarter of next year.
Look, this is different than the one that you're co-authoring with Philip Sanders?
Or? Yes. Yeah. So the Philip is a chapter contribution here is a three main writers with four contributors, I believe. Yeah. I mean, that's one side, but there's several books. I think the book called The Seventh Sense, which was published a couple of years ago, is one I'm rereading, because there you're getting into it's amazing when you go back to this intersectionality between politics and economics, and asking questions about whether or not that which we know as institutions have weaknesses and holes, and what will come out of it, the network effect, etc. So it's worth a read, and I'm rereading it.
Thank you so much, Monique, and good luck on writing your book. We're all looking forward to reading that.
Thanks so much for making time, Monique. I have crazily busy schedule.
Thank you, and pleasure and honor to be on this podcast with you, and thank you again for your flexibility and time.